south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, back in the saddle again. Couple of weeks of traveling, couple of different countries, way too many different airports. Oh, and hey, if you want to see some really sick people, I mean physically sick, go to an airport. You can't believe all those people on handicapped scooters. They're everywhere. Even the pilots and stewardesses have pot bellies. You can tell I'm a baby boomer. Still call them stewardesses. I don't think you're allowed to do that anymore. They're flight attendants, right? Oh, and don't get me started on them. Man, on every single flight, and I took a few of them just in the last weeks, the stewardesses had masks and face shields. Meanwhile, Dad is coming out saying that people who wear face masks a lot are chronically oxygen deprived and being poisoned little by little with excessive CO2. Yeah, I believe in 6 months or so, the mandate of wearing masks is going to be considered one of the most useless and idiotic healthcare decisions of the decade, though there'll be lots of competition for that prize. So anyway, the chubby stewardesses wore both masks and face shields. Worse yet, they scolded you, they did me, when my mask started slipping down my nose. That's a felony, right? 50 lashes. But when the food and drinks come, it's every man, woman, and gender-fluid person for himself. Oh, and you can forget about getting the usual hospital-style cafeteria food on board. Amazingly enough, they've actually done worse than that. Now all you get is a package of cookies and a little bag of mixed nuts that has a big sticker on it that says, "This does not contain peanuts or peanut remnants." What the f*** is a peanut remnant? Oh yeah, and there's signs all over the airport saying, "Maintain your social distancing." And every other seat at the boarding gate has a big red X taped over it. And everyone seems to obey that rule till about a half hour before your flight is supposed to board. Then the crowds push in, ear hole to a hole, and there's standing room only. Every seat's taken. So much for the fallacy of social distancing. Oh, and when you're on the plane and you have to use the restroom, never a good idea, even in the best of times. Rule number one, board the plane with an empty bladder. Even so, on long flights, all bets are off. But if you just can't take it, you know, you got to wedge yourself into that tiny little bathroom that smells like the elephant tent at Ringling Brothers. And the fact there's always a light dusting of pea spray on the seat. But that stands up to rigid COVID norms, right? By the way, I remember, and you probably do too, if you travel at all, about 7 or 8 months ago, every other seat in the airplane was blocked off too. You had to keep that one seat social distancing rule. Remember that? Actually, it was pretty nice. Then you didn't have to use your neighbor's love handles as an armrest, which is probably the only positive unintended consequence of the whole pandemic. But somehow now that one seat empty, one seat full rule has faded into oblivion. Meanwhile, the pudgy stewardesses, I mean flight attendants, with their fogged up face shields, continuously scold people as masks keep slipping lower and lower. In the end, gravity always wins, you know? And then, especially on those long flights, there's always a couple of sleepers with their heads cocked, their masks ajar, drooling on their headrests. Nice, huh? Oh, and then there's those COVIDiot forms and QR codes you gotta download and present when you're checking in. Oh, and you can't just go online and do that at any time. You have to do it 12 hours or less before your flight. They ask questions like, have you had a fever, cough, kissed an Aussie, been bitten by a bat? Have you been in contact in the last 12 hours with someone who has a fever or a cough or other COVIDiot symptoms? Come on, what a bad joke. Typical government lunacy. Yeah, right. If you're going to be flying, are you going to mark yes to any one of those questions? If you do, you're staying home. You're done. Duh. Oh, and you have to do that for the country you're going to fly out to and the one you're entering. Yep, both ways. And in some cases, for every country in between where you'll be changing planes. And you know how quirky those online forms can be. Now imagine those online forms in Spanish. On top of that, a lot of the forms are brand new in the beta testing phase, if you will. Anywhere along the line, you could lose your internet connection, it could seize up or send you back to the beginning, or just not allow you to enter certain data or reject what you're trying to enter. That's why you see massive lines at the information and help desks at the airport. All the people who just couldn't navigate those online forms end up in long, long lines. In fact, on my own computer within that 12-hour window, I was trying to jump through all those hoops myself. I started to question my own intelligence. You know, we all think we're above average, right? Isn't that funny? Every time they do a survey, about 65% of people say they're above average. Most obviously never took a statistics class before. And I kept thinking to myself, if these forms are designed for the average slug to navigate, maybe I've lost one too many brain cells along the way. Though I was, after a lot of false starts, able to slog through it and not have to get into the clueless Latino / helpless gringo line. Of course, you've heard me say before that Latinos love lines, and when they see one, they just get in, no matter what. Oh, and I think you know this. Gone are the days you could show up at the airport a half hour or even an hour before your flight time. I'm talking way back when flying used to be fun. Yep, that's right, all you Gen Xers and millennials. Once upon a time. You know, even before this COVIDiot nonsense, they used to tell you to get there 2 hours early. Well, man, even 2 hours can be cutting it close. Even if you think you've got all the online forms and QR codes right. In fact, when I bellied up to the Aeromexico check-in at the Tucumán Airport in Panama and handed the guy all my paperwork and QR codes, he punched my reservation into the computer. He looked at me, frowned, and said, "Lo siento." There's a note in the computer that says, "You haven't completed your healthcare form for the second leg of your trip." I figured there'd be some kind of glitch, so I printed out hard copies of everything a few hours earlier. I had something like a dozen pieces of paper. I handed them over to him. I know, most people check in these days with the QR codes they have on their smartphone. No physical paperwork or paper boarding passes necessary at all these days. And I thought, in my case, I better have some backup. There's just so much that could go wrong. And sure enough, the guy at the Aeromexico check-in window said I was missing something. I handed him my clutch of papers, my hard copies. And I said, "Will you please explain exactly what I'm missing, what I'm supposed to do?" So he rifled through them, looked up at me and said, "You're okay, you've got everything." Big sigh of relief there. However, if I'd have taken his word for it in the first place and got into another long line, I'd probably still be there. So my advice, if you're going to travel internationally, make hard copies of everything. Oh, and by the way, a couple days ago when I was in the airport in Mexico City, I saw a number of panicky gringos fidgeting with their phones, trying to find someone who spoke passable English to help them out. Why? The airport Wi-Fi was on the blink. It was out. So they couldn't enter or retrieve any data. Apparently, they didn't talk to their internet or telephone service provider back home in whatever state they were in and paid the additional charges for roaming. You know, I think it's something like 5, 10, or 15 bucks a day if you want international roaming. But you got to set that up in advance. Otherwise, you're stuck with the local Wi-Fi connection. And if it's strong and good, it's okay. But like I said, the airport in Mexico City, it's a huge airport too. The Wi-Fi would not connect. It was on the blink. So they were in the check-in line right behind me, panicking. And I said, "Look, just go to that pizza joint or the bar across the walkway. Buy a $10 beer or $20 slice of pizza." That's the airport gouge, you know that. "And they'll give you their Wi-Fi code and you'll be all set." That's what they did, and they were all right. I saw them board the plane. They walked right past my aisle and gave me the thumbs up. The very last ones to board. So anyway, I was hanging around Mexico for the last couple of weeks, Mexico City and Puerto Vallarta. Went to the stem cell clinic I've been telling you guys about for so long now. I'll give you the whole lowdown on that and progress reports as we go, so stay tuned for that. Now, if you think on this trip I changed my mind about not recommending Mexico as a great Plan B destination, you'd be wrong. A nice place to visit and go on vacation, but I wouldn't want to live there. And this trip reinforced my original thoughts. I don't recommend it at all. First of all, flying into Mexico City, man, I never saw such pollution. The whole city's covered in a gray-brown, what looks like a dust storm. In fact, you could look up any number of scientific articles on the net that'll tell you that just living there is like smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day. I'm talking about Mexico City now. It's got something like 22 million people, you know. I think it's the first or second most populous city on the planet. Oh, and I talked to a number of small businessmen who have brick-and-mortar joints, restaurants, travel agents, and such, and they're telling me that they have a terrible water crisis. I knew it was bad, but the predictions are for worse water shortages ahead. I'm just referring to Mexico City again. In fact, at one busy commercial business strip, I walked into a restaurant, sat down, asked the waiter where the restroom was, and he said, "Over there." Hey, did I just say West Womb? Must be that regressive Elmer Fudd gene. Anyway, then the waiter said, "There's no water. Use this." And he tried to shove a bottle of that snot-like bactericidal goop in my face. I said, "No thanks, I've got plenty of my own snot. Maybe next time." By the way, I think I told you this before. The word in Spanish for snot is moco, M-O-C-O. Anyway, went to the next restaurant. Same thing. No water, but plenty of snot-like goop dispensers. Though I gotta say, even hundreds of miles away at Puerto Vallarta, you know, a nice beach town on the Pacific coast, walked into a restaurant on the Malecón Strip, you know, that's the busy tourist area there, right along the shoreline. No water in that restaurant either. Plenty of moco dispensers, though. Meanwhile, across the street, you've got the Pacific Ocean. You know what the sailors say, water, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. By the way, Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, it's so totally gringoized, it's the Pacific Ocean version of Cancun. Beautiful place, too many gringos, first world expensive. Went into a grocery store, they want $3 for an avocado. Meanwhile, back in Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, and maybe even the big markets in the boonies in Mexico, you can get $3 for $1. But man, Puerto Vallarta is once again proof that when gringos land, the whole culture is tipped on its ear. In fact, one way to definitely know the gringos have landed, not just for all their pink, white, burned skin either, is how many Starbucks exist in a given town or city. In Puerto Vallarta, you walk in and buy an $8 cup of coffee, which I'll never buy, or a cafe latte mocha de java Kona blend with almond milk, which I'll never buy either or even try. Though it's interesting to poke your head in because the place is just loaded with gringos. In fact, sitting there by the ocean, there's a big jogging path just loaded with gringos too. You know, I couldn't help but notice for every Mexican that walked by, there were 3 or 4 gringos. Most of them in fashionable designer jogging getups too. Most of them slightly wrinkly and of early retirement age too. And almost none of them could speak a lick of Spanish. Though it's undeniable, Puerto Vallarta has its own kind of charm. The presence of so many gringos and the high prices just turned me off. Though I have to say it's got one big thing in its favor. Talking to all the taxis and Uber drivers, they all told me it's very safe. Probably one of the safest areas in Mexico right now. And naturally, I pumped the locals for information about the narcos and the gang problems throughout Mexico. And the big question, why Puerto Vallarta, which has about 200,000 or 300,000 people, why is it the safest place in Mexico right now? And you know, the answer is going to surprise you. It surprised me. Well, not that much. But hey, with all this Big Brother COVID crap and the way all the first world and third world lemmings fall in line, nothing should surprise you anymore. So as far as the gang and the narco situation, here's the dope on that. Turns out, and all the locals in the know seem to be in agreement on this, there's one cartel, one group of narcos running the show in the Puerto Vallarta area, the Jalisco cartel. And really, you could walk around all day and not see too much evidence at all of any narcos or gang members. Not too many people at all with tattoos on their necks and faces, gold teeth, and ass-crack pants. Turns out, and this was news to me too, when one particular gang is in charge, one narco cartel, there's virtually no gang wars, drive-by shootings, or guys hanging from bridges by their toes. And since there's no shoot-em-ups, there's no tourists or bystanders ending up in pieces or in the emergency room, the whole area appears quite safe. Whereas in the most of the rest of Mexico, especially as you get up towards the U.S. border, there are 2, 3, even 4 gangs always vying for power. And thus, you've got those shootouts, drive-bys, guys hanging from their thumbs from bridges, and tourist and bystander collateral damage. And that's sort of a recent development on the so-called Mexican Riviera, Tulum, Cancun, Playa del Carmen. Multiple gangs and cartels there are vying for position, and the tourists are getting in the way. Whereas in Puerto Vallarta, the Jalisco cartel's in control of all the vice in the territory. All the locals know that. The gringos and expats, they've got no clue, but the locals, they know it. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, businesses pay their protection money. The Jalisco cartel owns the politicians and pay off the cops. They alone run the drugs, prostitution, loan shark, and gambling rackets, as well as a coyote transport business and human trafficking to the States. And as far as tourists and expats and gringos living there, because of the lack of violence and relative safety compared to the rest of Mexico, people are pretty much unconcerned. And it is a very nice vacation destination. Though I have to admit, the Pacific side of anywhere in the Americas, north or south, is never quite as beautiful as the Caribbean side, where you have those crystal clear waters and beautiful powdery white sand beaches. Think of California beaches, like Malibu Beach. They're nice, but the water is never crystal clear. Way overrated, if you ask me. And if you're scuba or snorkeling, you don't have those beautiful tropical fish like you do have in the Caribbean, where you've got all those great coral formations. So, for example, if you rate California beaches 7 or an 8 out of 10, and the Caribbean beaches 9 or a 10, the Mexican beaches on the Pacific side, you can rate like Malibu, 7 or 8. And as you go farther south, Guatemala, El Salvador, Costa Rica, Panama, then the beach sand gets darker due to volcanic activity. And to me, it's not pretty. I wouldn't want to have a beach house there. Worse yet, almost impossible to walk on during the day because dark sand beaches, man, they absorb the heat. And then, as you move further to the Pacific side of South America, the beaches get lighter and whiter due to lack of volcanic activity. But still, none of the beaches I've ever been to on the Pacific coast of South America rate more than a 7 or 8 out of a 10 scale. And that's pushing it because the water is never crystal clear. And you've got those terrible Pacific undertows, so you don't want to go out too far. By the way, since I was in the land of the gringos, Puerto Vallarta, I discovered that many gringos and expats who spend a lot of time down there are very pissed off at the recent immigration and visa changes for gringos and expats. Well, for all visitors, actually, but mostly affecting gringos and expats, a theme that we discussed a couple of weeks ago. In fact, since I did that show, I got quite a few emails from very pissed off expats living down there. For example, this one from P.T. Marcos. He says, "Hey, Johnny, I just want to give you another heads up about what's happening in Mexico. Your other Mexican contacts have given you the basics about the crackdown on tourist visas, but here are some more important details you should know about. Some of it coming from a Facebook page by Sonia Diaz, a professional who works with expat visas and other paper pushers or tramitadores here in central Mexico. The interesting part is that the changes to the tourist and even residential visas for gringos and expats aren't random or even temporary. They have a definite purpose in mind." He says, "It all goes back to what you've been telling us all along about getting residency while the door is still open. Somehow, I was astute enough to get my permanent residency years ago back when the financial requirements were much lower than they are today. But many expats have been foolishly living on tourist visas and renewing them every 6 months, expecting the rules were never going to change. Now it's apparent it will become much more difficult to get residency, or at the very least, there will be longer and longer waits." All right, then our friend P.T. Marcos lays out this Facebook page for expats in Mexico that has 71,000 members. It's a Mexican immigration lady in the know, posted by Lalita Cruz, who's a dual U.S.-Mexican citizen whose husband worked for the Mexican Immigration Services. Let me give you some of the excerpts here. It says, "This year, all airports will follow the new tougher rules, and the land borders will follow the new rules beginning in January 2022. Immigration will continue to evolve and tighten up in the coming year as Mexico is no longer the loose and fast, easy to immigrate country it once was. And over the next 3 years, immigration to Mexico will become increasingly more difficult. These immigration changes have everything to do with the arrival of undocumented foreign populations in Mexico, obviously on the way to the U.S., though many will end up staying in Mexico, causing a strain on Mexican sustainability. In other words, food supply, housing, medical care, etc., all of which are stretched to the limit currently already, with COVID creating even more pressure on the current system." Then it says, "With an upsurge in unexpected applications by people wanting to enter the U.S., the thing is, when their applications to qualify to enter the U.S. are denied, next step, try to qualify for residency in Mexico. In January, the plan is to start detaining and deporting all foreign nationals who violate immigration policy. Please note residents are required to carry their actual card on them at all times, the original visa or residency card. Failure to do so will result in that person being detained." That applies to gringos and expats who've overstayed their visa or don't have residency. Oh, and this is key. It says, "The Mexican government realizes people are coming to Mexico to avoid the COVID restrictions in their own countries." In other words, lots of anti-vaxxers worldwide are piling into Mexico, mostly from the U.S., because of Mexico's loose restrictions on vaccinations and non-requirement of COVID testing to enter the country. All right, me, Johnny, throwing my 2 cents in here. I saw that firsthand this last week. To enter Mexico, I did not have to have a COVID test. No restrictions if you weren't vaxxed either. No erroneous up-your-nose PCR test or rapid antigen test. And no public or private business I visited in Mexico required any of that stuff either. All right, then P.T. Marcos continues. He says, "Mexico is considering requiring that new residency applicants be fully vaccinated prior to receiving their residency appointments at their home consulate." What? Oh man, that's not good. However, Mexico still does not agree with vaccination of children, so anyone under 17 would be exempt. Though anyone over 17 would have to comply. If this is decided on, it will start in January, possibly even in December 2021. However, this is just the tip of the iceberg. The word on the street with the common people, he says, They're thinking Mexico will back down on this. That's not likely. Mexico has plenty of resources and growth because of NAFTA. They don't need to bow to or suck up for foreign money like they did 30 years ago before NAFTA. Sure, it's true. Beach communities in Mexico rely heavily on foreign money, but those dollars come from tourists on short vacations, not residents or snowbirds or people popping in and out every 180 days. And it's those residents or snowbirds that drive up prices in Mexico more than they contribute to the economy. That's always been a double-edged sword. Tourists come for 2 weeks, toss a few thousand into the economy, and fly home. They're coming in just for a 1 or 2 week vacation. There'll be no travel restrictions for short visits like that. All right, then P.T. Marcos continues. He says, Johnny, today was a live broadcast in Spanish with a guest who is a senior executive with immigration in Mexico City. He says, I took some notes from the radio feed to share and help clear up some of the confusion that you see with many gringo fake book groups and forums recently. He says, yes, it's true. Mexican immigration has been much more diligent recently in attempting to crack down on misuse of tourist visas. He says Mexican immigration agents are now asking for more proof of your travel itinerary, such as your hotel accommodations, dates, addresses where you'll be staying, return airline tickets, exact length of stay, etc. And as for snowbirds and those on longer-term stays, the immigration officials will look at your age and retirement factors in their tourist visa assessments. By the way, me, Johnny, again, when I flew into Mexico, they asked me exactly how many days I was going to be there. And they gave me a brand new kind of three-colored form on which they wrote that exact number of days. They told me I must not lose that form because I had to hand it back in on the day I left, thus proving I stayed the exact number of days I wrote down initially on that form, not one day more. In other words, the new procedure is the immigration agents will look at your age, retirement factors, and how long you say you're going to stay, et cetera, et cetera. And they'll decide right there if they're going to let you stay the length of time you requested. That is, if it's longer than the 2 or 3 weeks a normal tourist will spend at the beach at a resort. So, for example, if you say you want to stay for 3 months, or 4, or 5, or 6, they have the power right there and then to decide. It sounds quite arbitrary, depending upon if you answer their questions satisfactorily. Oh, and there's another new harsh conditions for gringos and expats. If snowbirds own and rent out property in Mexico, they are now expected to be a temporary or permanent resident with a visa that gives them permission to work. Man, that sucks. So renting a property is considered work? That really complicates things if you own a property there. I've never heard of any other Latin country having that rule. In Honduras, Bolivia, Guatemala, Panama, whatever, you own a property, you rent it, and that's it. You don't have to be a permanent or temporary resident, much less have a work permit. That's nuts. Oh, and as far as remote workers or so-called digital nomads in Mexico, immigration officials are now saying that if you work there, then you are a resident of that country. You're not a tourist. So you're expected to have a residency or a visa card. All right, then P.T. Marcos says, repeat or serial tourists must note that all other trip histories are available in immigration computers now and are being constantly updated. He says anyone who stays for 180 days, leaves, and comes back in for another extended period will now be flagged by agents and given shorter and shorter visa periods. Some will be denied entry altogether. All right, that's the latest word out of Mexico. Thanks for that bad bit of news, Mr. Marcos. So there you have it, reason 2,456 through 76. Why I don't recommend Mexico as a good Plan B destination. Then again, as always, it's your call. However, if you have permanent residency already in Mexico, my advice is go for the passport. Because as you've probably surmised, the doors are closing on this immigration stuff and the windows of opportunity getting thinner and thinner. But hey, haven't we been saying that all along? In the entire 11 plus years we've been doing this show? Which begs the question, how far along are you on your Plan B? Are you a perpetual tourist or perpetual procrastinator? I hope for your sake you're making some progress. It'd be sad if you have been listening to the show all these years and haven't made some good contacts and got at least a few ducks in line. All right, changing gears now. You know, in this show, I like to point out how gringos and expats do things here in Latin America, even if they're not quite on the up and up and legit. I mean, that's what certain gringos and expats do, so I'm reporting on it. That's my job. And of course, I never recommend you do anything illegal. I just like to inform as to how certain gringos and expats find ingenious solutions around some of the problems that seem insurmountable. Case in point, expat Eddie, who's not exactly an anti-vaxxer, He says he might get the vax someday, maybe in a couple of years, once all the human guinea pig testing is done and the true results are in. In the meantime, Expat Eddie wrote me this email just a couple of days ago. He's writing from an undisclosed Latin American country on the Caribbean side, and it's not Guatemala. He says, Johnny, like you, I've been traveling through Latin America quite a bit in the last few months, and I've noticed in some Latin countries, the government's forcing businesses to ask for a vax card. Places like banks, government offices, even hardware stores won't let you in unless you flash a card, and I'm sure sooner than later, airlines will make you flash a vax card too. And when it comes to airlines and cruises, a fake one won't cut it. If there isn't now, there's going to be a national or international database. So the question is, how does a guy like me and millions of others who feel the same way get a real registered card without being a human guinea pig? Then Eddie says, I've heard stories of gringos bribing nurses at clinics with a $100 bill, and gringos walking into a clinic saying they lost their card and will pay whatever to get a replacement card. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Well, through the Latin American grapevine, I've found there are a number of doctors who feel the same way as I do. They won't take the vax till it's proven. But still, they administer it to people who want it, who come into their clinics and offices. And Johnny, I visited such a doc, and here's how it went. He walked into the cubicle, loaded up the syringe with the experimental jizz, placed it in my hand, and said, here's your first dose. Come back in 21 days, and I'll give you the second one. He said, did you ever inject yourself or a pet? I said, I injected my mother with insulin. She's a diabetic, and I've injected pets with antibiotics and stuff. He said, good, then you know what to do. I guess that was a tricky way of covering his ass. And now, Johnny, I have my vax card, I's dotted, T's crossed, all registered. And I can honestly say with a straight face, when asked about the vax, that I was given the Pfizer, both doses, 21 days apart. So, Johnny, FYI, just to let you know, there's a nice little grapevine out there. All right, Expat Eddie rides again. Boy, that's a brand new twist, huh? Now, I just know I'm going to get a bunch of emails from people asking me for a little more detail on that story. And when I get them, I'll ship them off to Eddie. I'm just the messenger. I'm staying out of it. Oh, and there's a PS here from Eddie. He says, if you pop off to a Latin American country and get faxed, your passport stamps better reflect the fact that you were in that country for both jabs, 21 days apart. And you have to appreciate the fact that there are some Latin American healthcare professionals that aren't buying the Big Pharma Big Brother line either.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.